Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the 11th episode of our podcast, The World of Heritage. We are students of the World Heritage Studies program at the Brandenburg Technical University, and this podcast is our study project for the semester, wearing the narrative course held by our lecturer, Ms. Caitlin Williams. In each episode, we have a new guest from the BTU community, and we have the opportunity to talk to another member of our community today. Our today guest is a recent World Heritage Studies graduate, Emilia Sanchez Gonzalez.
Emilia was born and raised in Mexico. She got her bachelor in tourism in 2015 from the Universidad de Guadalajara, Mexico, and in September 2020 graduated from the World Heritage Studies program at the BTU. Between the years of her studies, she made many volunteering experiences, like 6 months attending a cultural project in Japan, and later during her studies in Germany, she was continually very active and involved in the program and the lecturer's project. She also did 2 internships at the 42nd and 43rd World Heritage Committee in Bahrain and later Azerbaijan. Emilia had the opportunity to choose her study projects before the pandemic and went to Italy and worked on the Havana project remotely. Since her graduation in the summer, she is doing an apprenticeship with the ESAG Association while looking for a full-time job in the heritage field. We will further ask our guest more about her work experiences and educational achievements. So let us give a warm welcome to Emilia. Hi, Emilia. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Great. So let's start with the first round of the questions. Emilia, you just recently graduated from our program. Congratulations. What were the pros and cons of an online defense? Can you tell us a little bit about your experience and the process of progressing your thesis during the pandemic?
All right. Well, I exactly got to write my thesis during the whole time of the lockdown. So I have to say, in that sense, I didn't have the worst experience because I was actually working a lot before in a cafe, and we had to close the cafe, and that forced me to focus more on my thesis and get it done. So that worked out pretty good for me. In terms of the online defense, I really wish I would have been able to have it in person, because I was able in like previous defenses of my friends to visit them, and I thought that was really nice. And you can engage with the audience, like you can invite people to look, like to be there for your defense. And I kind of missed that experience, but it was also fine. Like my professors were, I did it with Medium as my first advisor and Manuel Peters as my second one. And both of them, we still managed to have a very engaging conversation for the defense. So yeah, it was nice. I mean, afterwards, the process of looking for a job during the pandemic, that has probably been the most stressful part. Yeah.
So could you make some trips after graduation then?
No, not right after graduation. Well, okay, so right after I submitted my thesis and while I was waiting for the defense, that was the summer. So that was the summer when some of the restrictions were lifted. And I got to be a group coordinator for European Heritage Volunteers. So I went to Halberstadt, and we had a project there of documenting a Jewish cemetery, and that was really nice. And I also got to go to Hamburg for the first time after living in Germany for almost 3 years, and to Denmark. Yeah, so after that. And then now, this past holidays, I came to Luxembourg, where I'm right now, visiting my sister who's studying here.
What projects or work are you doing at the moment?
I'm working a lot with ESAG, the European Students Association for Cultural Heritage. I am their digital media coordinator, so I'm working with the whole team to post on social media, on the website, on LinkedIn, on everything, and try to reach as many people as we can and tell them about our events that, for example, the ESAG talks that happen every month. So that's like the main thing, the project I have. I'm also trying to work on a self project to maybe, I don't know, submit articles to different places or for the Arts and Cultural Management Conference, the ACMC, which is happening tomorrow, which is starting tomorrow. And it's for 3 days, and I will speak at that conference. So I'm trying to not lose touch with heritage as much as I can. Yeah, and I think that's really important.
I can agree. What plans did you have before the pandemic happened for after your graduation? Did they change because of COVID?
Oh God, yes. Yes, I think one main thing was that my parents were finally going to come visit and they couldn't. So I think also the amount of, like, the pool of jobs got very reduced. So several jobs that I had foreseen, like, they were not available anymore. And also some other places, they canceled projects they had or scholarships that they were going to give out because they didn't have funding anymore. So this kind of thing, yeah, changed a lot. And suddenly it became really important to develop more digital skills, which I'm trying to do. Yeah, but it's not a stronghold for a lot of people in our field.
For your bachelor studies, why did you decide to study tourism?
So actually, most of my life, I lived in really small towns, and then I knew that I would have to go somewhere else for university. So it was just lucky that we moved to a really big city. And there, I really wanted to study something culture related. And it was the most, it was the degree that had to do the most with culture. We didn't really have like archaeology or anthropology or things like that so much. And I just wanted to go like directly into culture. So I decided to go for tourism, and there you can kind of make your way. So I chose, you know, not to take any of like hospitality or hotel management courses, but mostly about cultural studies.
Both of us study tourism as well, by the way. So I think we can relate to that.
Great.
Can you remember a specific moment when you first fell in love with World Heritage?
I think I probably didn't know, you know, the concept of heritage. I mean, as a kid, of course, I didn't know it. But when I was young, maybe like from, I don't know, like 5 to 8 years old, we lived in the desert, like very literally the desert. And there were some prehistoric paintings on rocks. And my parents would always take us there. And I really loved going there. And we would sit and we would draw them and like try to decipher what they meant. And I really loved like getting in touch with that history. And I didn't know it at the time, but then I think that was pretty decisive in how I went and like started getting more involved with culture and history and heritage in the end.
Yeah. That's so cool. But was the desert in Mexico as well?
Yeah. Okay. So I lived for 5 years in the Sonora Desert. It's the same desert that goes to Arizona. So it's kind of like, it's a very dry desert. It rains like 2 times a year. Yeah, it's a very interesting place.
For studying in Germany, why you decided to study heritage studies?
So I was looking for master programs in Europe that they would have to do with cultural management or something related. And I was looking a lot in Germany because I knew that it's pretty convenient for foreign students because we don't pay fees. So I thought, okay, I mean, you know, that's pretty convenient. And I also already studied German since I was in Mexico. So I thought if I'm gonna have a part-time job, maybe, you know, Germany would be also a good option. So I was mainly looking at, I don't know, France, Germany, around that area. And then I came across these studies and I just loved all the classes and loved everything about it.
I think a lot of people can relate to that and had the same experience with the program. So thanks, Emilia, for answering the questions from part 2. We will take a short break and we will be back in a few seconds. With the second part of today's talk and some questions about Germany and Cottbus. Emilia, moving to Cottbus, how did you like the city and how would you describe it?
Well, that I would say the first day or like maybe the first week, it was a shock. I got to Cottbus on a Sunday. So yeah, I think anybody, like everybody knows what it looks like a Sunday in the middle of winter, well, beginning of winter, it was So the city was completely empty and I was really shocked. And it continued for a bit that way. Yeah, I think also a lot of people were feeling a bit disconnected with how much, you know, the weather was different and not so many people on the streets or like not so much color. For me, I think not seeing street food is something that's kind of weird. So yeah, like I felt like there was a lack of life outside the university circle, but you know, you slowly get used to it and Cottbus is so convenient. And once you get like a good group of friends, you start discovering other parts of the town. And I just love that it's so easy to go into nature, which is something that's very difficult where I come from. So I think that's great.
You explained that before coming to Germany, you already practiced German, you were learning it. How could you improve your language skills and daily life interactions in Cottbus?
I studied German until, I don't know, maybe like B2-ish level in Mexico. So when I came here, I think the first year, I didn't speak much German. Because, I mean, I thought I would, but our program is so international. And then even the German people that were in our program, we just got used to speaking English with each other. So I didn't practice it that much. But I finally started getting into it again when I got my part-time jobs. So that's how I started doing that again. And then, you know, just trying to change the language I spoke with people that I knew also spoke German and also needed to practice, which is kind of what I'm doing with my boyfriend as well. We met speaking English and then at some point we both decided we need to speak German. So yeah, we just switched to German and it really makes a difference.
Yeah, I feel like I always say that you can only really learn the language if you can interact with locals and live in a country. So, yeah. You worked in the international office of the BTU. How was that experience and what were your tasks there?
It was really good. I started working there first for the enrollment process. So I did that and it was just like kind of an event thing. And it was really nice because I got to interact with everybody that was coming in new and you could already tell them about the things you learned in the past year and how to make the process, especially with all the bureaucracy and these things, easier. So that was really nice. And after that, then my boss, she said she needed an assistant. So I also applied for that job and then I worked directly with her. And there is this program for the DAAD, like they get some students from Mexico. Now it's extended to Latin America, but from Mexico to come here for bachelor programs. So I was obviously also working with them. And then we were also planning the Cottbus Open, which sadly couldn't take place last year, but planning the Cottbus Open was also really, really fun. And excursions for international students to Dresden and Leipzig.
Through the 3 years living in Germany, did you visit many German cities? And what is your favorite city?
So I visited the south, although that was before these 3 years, because I also came to Germany for my exchange semester in my bachelor's. And I was living in Munich at that time. So I got to visit a lot of like Baden-Württemberg and Bayern. And then this time I decided to focus more on the north. So I've been to Schwerin and like the North Sea, Hamburg, Halberstadt or like Weimar, all this area. And recently I also went to Trier, because I also really always wanted to visit there, the oldest city in Germany. And let's see, my favorite, I don't know, maybe Heidelberg. I think Heidelberg is so beautiful.
With all the wine and in this valley, right? It's really, yeah,
yeah,
it's really beautiful. What is the main difference between living in Mexico and Germany?
I would say something that is maybe a huge difference is how safe you feel all the time in Germany. I mean, that doesn't speak so well of my country, but I just really love that if I'm coming back from the station, like the train station at night, I feel completely safe walking by myself from the station at night, which is something I would never do back home. And I also love that you have these huge windows and you can open them and just like, you don't have bars on the windows. And I think it feels like you're able to, I don't know, be less careful with your environment instead of always having to think, okay, I can go to this place, or I have to go at this time only, or like this kind of things. So that part, that would be a huge difference. And the other side is the people, just people are very different, you know. And in that sense, I think Mexico wins a little bit over, but.
Talking about Cotbus, can you describe what is the main attribute of Cotbus for you?
I would say Cotbus is a great place to study. And as an international student, especially when you come from a country where the currency doesn't do you any favors at all. So all the amount of money I have saved, you know, when it transforms to euros, it's not worth at all the same. So Cotbus makes it really easy for you to be able to sustain yourself because the rents are not as high as other German cities. And also some people see it as a disadvantage that it's small, but I think it's also really good because in that sense, you don't waste so much time with transportation. And also it allows you to focus on the things that you really want to do. And like it really allows you to focus on your studies or look at your things instead of, you know, having so many distractions as other places have. And just again, like the nature thing, I think it's great that you can just grab your bike and be outside in 15 minutes and you have real bike trails. And it's also pretty conveniently located because you can go to Berlin if you need anything, either a job or just, you know, big city feeling.
Thanks, Emilia, for your great answers. We will be back in a short while.
Hi again. Let's continue with the final questions about the major. Emilia, can you tell us more about your experience studying at the BTU and what were your favorite courses?
I really liked Body of Knowledge. I mean, as an introduction, it was great. And it really made me feel that I had chosen the right thing to study. At that moment, I know she's not there anymore, but at that moment we had Anka Prodan. Anka was so fantastic. And she really made us study. Like it was one of the few classes that we had an actual exam. So that was, I think it really gave us good basis for everything, learning about all the conventions. Yeah, so I really like that. And I also really like globalization. I like this courses, which was more of a critical development, which it's also something we don't do so much in like in Mexican universities. It's more of a passive learning. And I think that really helped me to develop a critical perspective, which really helped me afterwards for my thesis. And just study projects. The study projects are great. The study projects make up for any class that was not good. You have a study project and you just feel like you love it again.
You just mentioned the study projects. Going a little bit deeper into that, have you also traveled to the site and how was the nature of the work?
Yeah, so I decided you're only required to take 2 study projects, but I decided to do 4 because, as I said, I really love them. So I didn't travel only for one of them. So the one for Havana, it was about the World Monument Watch. We wrote nominations for the World Monument Watch and we wanted to work with Havana because I was partnered up with a Spanish girl who had formerly been there on site and worked on it. So we did that. Yeah, we couldn't go there. But for all the other ones we did, so I did one for, it was with Simona. We went to Assisi in Italy. And we were there developing like a market analysis to rebrand the World Heritage City of Assisi. So it was taking everything into account and like interviewing people and speaking with the authorities, the tourism authorities there. So that was very interesting, developing the brand. And then the 2 World Heritage Committees, that was great. I was so lucky to go to both of them. In the first one in Bahrain, we were all kind of general logistics assistants. So because I can also speak French, I was mostly in like registering people and like answering the questions for people that got there first. But we got to see all different sides of the organization of the committee and also sit at the sessions. And if you had any interested like specific session that you wanted to see, then we were allowed to just go there and take notes on the whole thing. And it was the same for Baku. In that one, they assigned us more to specific posts. So I was working with the World Heritage Center, and I was back like in the back of the podium, taking the time. So when the people spoke, I would take the time and then press like the red part when they go over time, and just making sure that the agenda was going smoothly. But it was a great experience.
Moving on to talk about your thesis project, how did you develop your questions? How did you find your supervisor? Did you also go back to Mexico for your research at the site?
For my thesis, my question changed a little bit. So I think I got set back a couple of months because I changed some of the things I wanted to do. Because I originally wanted to work with a community in Mexico, and then I couldn't do it. I was kind of sure of the topic I wanted, which was something to do with indigenous communities and cultural education. I also, with that theme in mind, it was very clear to me that my supervisor should be Miriam, because she did her PhD with Mexican communities. So I went directly to her. And also I knew that my weakest point was the methodology, and she was also really good at that, so I just went back to her for that. And yeah, I was worried that I wouldn't be able to go to Mexico, and if it was all right to just do it with the data that I had accessible, but she made me feel really confident that it doesn't matter, because you can do it, you can do your research in different ways. And if you do a data analysis, like content analysis, it's not the same way as if you needed to do interviews or needed to do some on-site observation. Of course, in the future, if you can develop it further and combine it with on-site observation, then that's even better. But you are pretty capable of doing it also remotely.
During your study years, do you know your graduated friends and classmates? Which career direction did they follow in the end?
So I know a lot of us are still searching. I know a lot of, or like several, still haven't submitted their thesis. They prolonged it a little bit more. Some of them are already in PhD, like they went directly for a PhD. All of them that did that stayed, you know, in the field. But yeah, like some of them even pursued the PhD in BTU. Some of them are working outside heritage in more like management, like general management things, or they went back to their former careers. And I do know a few though that are in the field. So for example, Juan Carlos, my friend from European Heritage Volunteers, he's working directly in the field. Others are at UNESCO, are at the World Heritage Center. And maybe most of the people went back to their countries. I'm not sure. It happens a lot as well. Like, it depends.
Are you planning to continue with your PhD, or are you mostly concentrating on finding a job in the field?
So I'm trying to kind of do both things parallel. I would like to work directly and then maybe do PhD afterwards. But at the moment, if there is a PhD that I'm interested in, or if like it's a good opportunity, I am applying anyway. So I'm actually right now in the middle of an application for the Graduate Center of the Study of Culture in Gießen. And yeah, we'll see. I mean, I will apply to PhDs and apply to jobs and see what comes.
All right, so we're already done with the last part. And our last question is, what World Heritage Site do you find most impressive and why?
Okay, so I say that's a very difficult question, but maybe on the natural side, it could be called Dongxia. I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but the Rainbow Mountains in China, because I think it's really just a marvel how can nature do that. So that would be one of them, which I haven't been able to see personally, but on the natural side it might be that one. And on the cultural, maybe Samarkand in Uzbekistan, because I love the Silk Road, and I think the details in how they painted everything, or like how they, the artistic vision is so great. Yeah.
We haven't had this two sides yet, so great. Thanks a lot, Emilia, for answering all our questions. They were really helpful and encouraging. And thanks for sharing your exciting stories with us. Thanks also to you guys for listening to the 11th episode of our podcast. We hope you enjoyed our interview with Emilia. Also, if you haven't listened to the other episodes yet, you definitely have to do so. We have, for example, Kat from Heritage Conservation and Site Management, or Rachel from World Heritage Studies, or Helena as our academic advisor. So yeah, just listen into it.
Furthermore, if you want to see more about the podcast, you can also follow us on our Instagram page, The World of Heritage. We would also appreciate your feedback. For our next episode of the World Heritage Podcast, we will talk to our very special guest, our project lecturer, Ms. Caitlin Williams. Therefore, we are really excited and really looking forward to talking to her. And thanks again for listening, and stay safe. Bye.
Bye.